Say, we're starting here on the top of Hey, I'm with Aleph, two lines down. Why me name it Rav Sheshet? Rav Sheshet, this is a question and really that continues the thought process that we spoke about yesterday with regards to the relationship between a child and a parent. Yesterday we dealt with the medical treatment of the parent by the child. Over here we have it in a different context where there is also a mitzvah, which is Ben Maushi Aseh Shliach Laviv Lahakuto Lekalulo. Can a Ben be a Shliach Beitin in order to carry out the orders of Beit Din, whether that means to hit the individual, give them Malkot, or the Kalalo, or to curse them? Rashi terms it as putting him into Nidui, doing something that would be considered of a negative nature that is close to or similar to the Kalalo. Amalei, Vacher, Mihitiro, since when is anybody allowed to do this? You're not allowed to hit your fellow Jew, you're not allowed to curse your fellow Jew. So then why is a third party allowed to do this on behalf of Beit Din? He is empowered because of Kvod Shemaim. The Beit Din is empowered to act on behalf of God. And so they give over those powers to the Shliach Beit Din. And so the Shliach Beit Din acts under the auspices of the court, but that's what allows him to do what otherwise would be asur. Hachanami Kvod Shemaim Adif. So why should be any different with regards to a parent? If the restriction by a parent and the restriction by another individual are the similar in nature, then the same reason you would override it by other individuals is the same reason you could override it by a parent. So now, that's what Sheshet's answer is, that it shouldn't be a problem at all, just like it's not a problem for anybody else. It's not a problem for a child towards a parent. Meitavei, now the Gemara challenges it from a Braita. Ma, mish mitzuve lahakuto. Someone who has the command is instructed and joined to hit him. Mitzvah shlo lahakuto. There's still a mitzvah not to hit him. Someone who is not commanded to give him malkot, certainly there's no mitzvah to hit him in that case. My love, what is the scenario here? What is this cryptic braita saying? We're both talking about a case where there is a mitzvah to hit the individual, which is that he's acting on behalf of the Beit Din, under the auspices of the Beit Din. And the difference between the two sections of the Braita have to do with who is the individual that is enjoined over here to do the action. In the first case, Misha Mitzuveh Lahakoto. Mitzuveh over here means the person, the Shliach Beit Din, who's instructed to do this. It's a case where it's a third party, that they're not related at all. Over there, there's still a mitzvah Shlo Lahakoto. There's still a mitzvah not to exceed the Arba'im Malkot that are granted by the Torah, or that the Torah permits. Prescribes in these certain situations, because Pen Yosef, because maybe he'll add on too many, and then he'll hit him where he shouldn't have hit him. So that's be the first section of the Braita. The second section of the Braita will be a case where Enu Mitzuveh Lahakuto. Who's that? That's the child. The child is not instructed to hit the parent. Enu Din Shem Mitzvah Shelo Lahakuto. So certainly over there, there's no mitzvah to hit, or in essence, there is no right to hit. And the way Rashi terms it over here, it is Ve'elif Azara L'Makeh Aviv O Chaveiro Mehocha. And this will be the source for the azhara against hitting a parent. Because the way the bright thought is describing it is that only in the case where he's a shliach beit din, where he's not related, is there a right to hit the person the first 40 malkot. Anything in excess of that is under a restriction. And then he says, but when it comes to a child towards a parent, they're under that restriction from the beginning. They don't have that right even starting for the first 40. And that'll be the azhara. Or Makeh Aviv. So that's the first way to read the Braita. Reading the Braita that way obviously is a problem for Rav Sheshet because you're distinguishing or differentiating between a third party doing it and the child doing it towards the parent. Gemara says, lo, idi v'idi, both cases, lo shna b'no, lo shna acher. It doesn't matter who is the sheriff, who is the appointee of Beit Din, whether it's a third party or a child. Lo kasha. So what's the difference between the two cases in the Braita? Kan b'makom mitzvah, kan shelo b'makom mitzvah. Has to do with whether the person's hitting him b'makom mitzvah or lo b'makom mitzvah. B'hachiktani, and this is how to read that braita. Uma b'makom mitzvah, in a place where there is a mitzvah, meaning shliach beit din, shim mitzuveh lahakoto, where he does have, he's enjoined by the Torah to hit him, mitzvah shlo lahakoto. There's still a mitzvah not to exceed the prescribed amount by the Torah, that if you exceed 40 malkot, then you're going to be held accountable for that. Shalova makom mitzvah, in a place where there's no mitzvah, meaning that you're not empowered by Beit Din, you're not hitting the individual under the auspices of Beit Din. Sheinu mitzuveh lahakuto, there you have no right to hit him, or there's no mitzvah to hit him. Enu din, shemitzvah shalova lahakuto, certainly over there you have no right to hit the individual. And then Rashi says over here, V'aliv azarala makeh aviv ocha beiro mehalka. From this limud, then you would say that this is the azhara, not to hit somebody. Right. How do you know that there's a restriction against making a chabura? It's from here. In the case where you're empowered by Beit Din and by the Torah, nevertheless, there's still a restriction against exceeding the amount the Torah says. Then certainly in cases where there is no mitzvah and there's no tzivui, then there's a restriction against hitting. And that restriction will equally apply to any individual in Israel, or whether a child towards a parent. Subsumed under the restriction of hitting any other Jew is also the restriction against hitting one's parent. The punishment might be different in each of these cases, but the restriction is the same restriction. Do not hit a fellow Jew, and it'll derive from the psukim by makot, which are that you may not exceed by the prescribed amount of the Torah, and that's an iser lav that's associated with it. So if you read the braita that way, it's not a problem for Rav Sheshet, because now we're equating hitting an individual and the child hitting a parent and the other hitting a third party. It just has a question of whether you're a shliach beit din or you're not a shliach beit din. That's the only question at hand. Tashma. Hayotze leharig. Someone is being taken out to be executed, put to death. Ubabino v'yikao v'kilulo. And then the child comes and hits the parent who's on death row, who's being taken out to be sentenced to death, being executed. He hits him v'kilulo, or he curses him chayav. You will be held accountable for that. He is liable for that. Ba'cher v'yikao v'kilulo patur. And then if it's a third party that's coming in and doing it, then he's exempt. There is no chiyuv over there. There's no culpability in that case. Vavinan ba. Umayishna b'no, umayishna acher. Question, the obvious issue is, why is there any difference between a child and anybody else? If you view the person as a gavra ketilo, if you view the person as a walking dead person, that's why the third party is patur. The child should be patur for the same reason. If you believe that the child's chayav because he's still alive, and he's yet to be put to death, then that should be true for the third party as well. Why would you differentiate between them? The case here is where they want to take him out to be executed, and he refuses. He refuses to go out, so they have to take him out by force. They have to act upon him. And that's the difference here. The difference will be that this individual is acting on behalf of the Beit Din. He's under the auspices of the Beit Din. He's a shliach of the Beit Din. And the question is, are you the child, or are you someone else? And the bright dove would then be differentiating between a third party who has the right to do this when they're under the auspices of the Beit Din, whereas a child who does not have the right to do this under the auspices of the Beit Din. That would be the easy explanation of the bright dove. And that would then be a question of Rav Sheshet, who thinks that there should be no distinction. So Rav Sheshet obviously can't explain the bright dove that way, because that would undermine his position. Rav Sheshet muki la b'sha'im misarvim bo letzeit. It's not a case where they're pressing him to leave, not where he's refusing to go out to the execution. Iachi, acher nami. So then in that case, why isn't the acher also held liable, just like the child is held liable? Acher gavra ketilo. For the third party, this individual is considered to be a walking dead man. He's on death row, he's about to be executed, he's considered to be dead. So now, it's interesting that the Gemara goes this direction, because that only answers the question with regards to the acher, but then you just open up the problem with regards to the ben. Why should the son then not be under that same rubric? But then the Gemara asks a separate question, which is Amar Rav Sheshet. Baishu yashin. If he embarrassed someone while they were sleeping, umate, and then he died, never awoke from that sleep, chayav. He's still considered to be chayav. So now what the Gemara here is trying to do, and this is the Baal Tosafot point out, that's why it's important, it says umate, that he died from this, is basically put this individual in the same position as someone going out to be executed to death. Why should there be any difference between someone who's sleeping and then was died in their sleep versus someone who's being taken out to be executed and then is killed? You're in the same position, basically, where the person will never awake to hear about the busha or be embarrassed about that which was done to them. Yet, Rav Sheshet still says you're liable in that case, even though the person was sleeping and even though the person dies in their sleep. The question is, by the acher, why they are patur? The Gemara says, because gavra ketilo, that's why he's patur. The Gemara says, wait a minute, how could you even suggest that? Rav Sheshet says, by the person who's sleeping, you're chayav. Then certainly by the gavra ketilo you should be chayav. So the Gemara is using exactly the logic that you're saying. Right, and saying that you are chayav. And the reason you are chayav is because of the children. The embarrassment is not solely to the individual themselves, but the embarrassment affects the yorshim, or the individuals who are relatives or close to this person. And therefore, they do are chayav. But if that's the case, you would also say by gavra ketilo there should be no difference. The gavra ketilo is at least alive, meaning that there's even more chance that you consider it to be embarrassed, or all the factors that you're speaking about here, they should be more applicable, and you should be chayav. So how can you say the person's patur just because they're a gavra ketilo? where it says, Ochel Ma'eskinon, v'shiyiko ha-ka'ash im ba'shove pruta. He injured him, he hit him, but the damage or the injury that was done was less than a pruta's worth. V'amar Rabbi Yami, amar Rabbi Yochanan, yiko ha-ka'ash im ba'shove pruta, loke. So then when we have a position that seems to undermine what you're suggesting now, which is even if a person does a haka, a chabura or chabala in someone that is less than a shave pruta, meaning that the monetary damage that was done here is less than a pruta, nevertheless, they get malkot. So we have to separate between two issues here. It says a general issue in the zikin, which is there a lav in the zikin? And is there then a requirement of monetary compensation? By chabura or chabala, it's obvious, and that's what the Gemara says over here, which is that there are two separate issues. One is that if you injure someone, you hit someone, you're violating a lav min haTorah, and you're subject to malkot. There's a separate issue, which is that then you have to make monetary recompense to the individual because you did damage to them, and there's nizikin. Question comes up, when it's not chabala, when you're damaging someone else's property, nizikin, is there an iser lav there? Which is never clear in the Gemara whether there really is an iser lav to extrapolate from chabala and chabura or not. We spoke about this in Baba Kama. But what the Gemara is saying over here is, listen, you're right. With regards to the monetary compensation, the solution that you're suggesting over here, which is less than a shavet pruta, less than a shavet pruta is relevant when you're talking about monetary recompense. When you're talking about malkot, when you're talking about chabura, it's irrelevant what the amount of the damage is. It's if you do a chabura, you're a chayav. Malkot. So the Gemara's suggestion was that the haka'ah was so small, and that's why they were patur over here. The suggestion being that you'd be patur from Malkot in that case. Rabbi says you can't say that because here we have an explicit memra from Rabbi Yochanan that says you are chayav Malkot in that case. It says no problem. My patur, the ka'amar, patur mi mamon. That's what it means. In the Brayta, when it says that the third party is patur, means that he's patur from the monetary obligation, he still will be chayav in Malkot. So now the Gemara finally jumps over to Ben. In all these solutions, you'd still have to address why the son would be different than the other party. The Gemara so far is just trying to figure out why the other party is patur, but ignoring the ben. Now they come up with an answer and says, okay, yeah, they're patur mi mamon. Bichlal de beno chayav mi mamon. So now you're going to suggest what? That the chiyuv on the son side means that he has to pay the monetary damages to his father? What? Right. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's less than a pruta. And on top of that, the child is more likely to be patur from mamon. Because remember that when it comes to a third party, you're only going to be chayav malkot. When it comes to a ben, you're chayav mita. So the chance of kimle derabim bine obviating the need for monetary compensation is much higher by the child versus the case by malkot, where we'll see. When we get to malkot, deal with ein lokinu mishalmim, but that's a machloket, whether you can have malkot and compensation in the same violation. So here, of course, if you're going to say it's patur mamon for the acher, now you're going to say, oh, for the child, that's chayav mamon? There's no reason to say that. Elo bidino must be when you say patur and chayav in the braita, it means bidino, in the din that is appropriate to them, which means that the third party is patur me malkot, and chachanami bidino. So too by the child, it means he's chayav bidino, which means he's chayav mita for hitting the parent. So now you're still stuck in the same bind, which is Varav Sheshet. How are you going to explain this braita without it undermining his position that there should be no distinction between a child and a third party? The Braita seems to explicitly state that there is such a difference. Ela acher hainu time of the patur. This is the reason the third party is patur in that case of the Braita. Damarka, v'nasi ba'amcha lo ta'or. Says that you may not curse a nasi, an important person, a leader in your nation, but there the pasuk is ba'amcha. And from there the Gemara learns, ba'usse maseh amcha, only someone who follows in the ways of the Torah. Mean that the restriction against cursing the Nasi is only if the Nasi acts appropriately. If the Nasi acts inappropriately, then the Isur is no longer there, it does not exist. Mar says, Hatinach Klala. This says, along the line, show what you asked before in the reverse, which is, you found a solution for Klala, Haka'a Minalan. How does that solve the problem of Haka'a? I mean, it's one thing to say, Osem Ase Amcha, because it says, Nasi Ba'amcha Lo Ta'or. There is no such qualification when it comes to haka'a, to hitting. But you don't say you can't hit only people who follow the Torah. That's not the guidelines over there. So Mar says, the makshin in haka'a l'klala, that there's a hekesh between haka'a and klala. And here, Rashi brings two possibilities as to what that hekesh is. One possibility is, he just says, it's a mematzino. It's a metzino that we find, just like we find by klala, it's this way, so too by hakaa, it should be this way. Basically, you're saying it's paradigmatic in nature, which is the nasib amchado taor teaches you that this qualification of amcha should apply to anything where it deals with ben adam lechaviro. It's interesting, me matzino. Rashi then brings the alternative view, which is ikadamre, hakesha dichtiv, because the psukim and mishpatim bring in very close proximity, makei aviv, umikalel aviv. The truth is that they're not right next to each other. They're not juxtaposed. There's one pasuk that sits in between them. And so they are close together, but it's not your typical type of hekesh where they are immediately adjacent to each other. So Rashi brings it. Later on, Rashi seems to hang on to this and says that the person who dissents from this hekesh says that there is no hekesh because the fact that the psukim are separated, and therefore there is no such hekesh. All right, so there, Gemara says, Makshina akal klala. Just like Miklala, there's a qualification of Amcha, so too, by Akka, there'll be that qualification. So Mar says, okay, now you solve the Acher problem. The Acher problem is that this person is not a nice person, that's why he's being taken out to be put to death, and so therefore the restrictions against Hakka and Klala are not in effect, because this is not someone who's Oseh Maseh Amcha. Yochi Beno Nami. So now, what's the story with the child? If the qualification applies to the third party, why doesn't the same qualification apply to the child? And therefore the child should also be freed of any restriction of makeh and klala. It's kadamara pinchas b'shasa tshuva. The father did tshuva. It says, hachanami, b'shasa tshuva's over here too, he did tshuva. It says, yachi, acher nami. How are you solving your problem? Right, if you solve the problem for the child, now you open up the problem for the acher. Because if you did tshuva, there's no longer nahar ose ma'ase amcha. Amar of mari, b'amcha, b'mikuyam sheb'amcha. Now, he has a different limur than the word amcha. Rather than ba'ose ma'ase amcha, there's also another qualification of amcha, which is v'mikuyam she'amcha, as Rashi notes over here, haro'oi le'itkayem. Someone who will live. Someone who will survive. In that it's a living person, a person that will continue to live. That's where the restrictions are. Velo ze she'nigmar dino. Not this person who already has a conclusion in the verdict that's going to put them to death. That person's not included on these restrictions. So again, now it bounces back the other way. If you found a reason by Mekuyam Shamcha to poter the Acher, then why is Beno Chayav? Beno should be under that same qualification. My says, Midahava Lachar Mita. It's no different than after death. And that's over here. Rashi already qualifies that it's the next Mishnah coming up in the Gemara, which is, we're going to learn in 1 second that Mikalel Lachar Mita is Chayav. Someone, of course, is a parent. After the death of the parent is still Chayav. So now, once you've done that, you've now opened it up for the child, that the child, even in the face of death, has certain responsibilities. I mean, they're chayav for klala, even after the death of the parent. And so now, Rashi says, v'im tomar batzanan makela chamita patur. Now you run into the problem, what about haka'a? So klala, you solve the problem. Klala, for another party, is governed by mekuyam sheba amcha, that the person has to be a surviving person in order for you to be chayav. On the other hand, when it comes to a child, they're still chayav, even after the death of the parent, they're chayav for cursing. So now we solve the problem in distinction that applies by klala. Problem is haka'a. How do you deal with haka'a? The next Mishnah we're about to read is going to tell you that makel achar mita is not chayav. So then how can you solve this problem? Haka'a. Why is there one that says patur by the acher and says chayav by the child? They should have the same din. Or it says, v'acha mechayav le'akak, d'tani yikal v'kilalo. Hainu taima, the patur, makel achar mita. What's the reason you're patur for haka'a after mita? Yishum debin and chabura. Because you need an injury, you need a wound. In order to be chayav, that's what we spent time on in yesterday's daf, that the meaning of haka'a means not simply to hit, but to wound. And therefore, in order to be chayav, you need a wound. That is impossible, ulachar mita, like a chabura. There is no such thing as the chabura lachar mita, the like a nefesh. You can't have a wound, you can't have the letting of blood after death, because there is no nefesh left to let the blood. The nafka le'el mi nefesh, v'yotzei le'areg, eka chabura, the chayu, el the sofu lamut. So over there, by the case of a person, even if he's a walking dead person, the exemption by the dead person is because it's a technicality. It's not because you're really patur la'achar mita, the only reason you're patur la'achar mita is because you can't qualify under the requirements that the Torah puts forth, which is to make a chabura. But a walking dead person who is being taken out to be executed, you can accomplish that, and you can overcome that technical problem of chabura. And so for that reason, the ben will be chayav for a chabura, for a person who is being taken out to be killed, vis-a-vis after death, where there isn't such a thing. So now, for the Acher, we're talking about someone who is being taken out to be executed. They are not classified as Mikuyam Shebe'amcha. They're not Mikuyam Shebe'amcha. There is no, then, Chiyuv for Klala. And we're going to have to say that there's a Hekesh to Haka'ah, which makes that they're also exempt by Haka'ah. By the child, we find that the din is different. That the child, with regards to Klala, there is no such exemption after death. Child still chayav after death, and that means the person is a walking dead person is still under that same restriction of klala. With regards to haka'ah, the child technically is chayav for haka'ah l'achar mitah. The problem is you can't fulfill the requirements of the Torah to create an injury. But here, where the person is a walking dead person, there you can reach the qualifications of wounding the individual, and therefore you'll be chayav. So that's the machloket. Basically what we're having here is Rav Sheshet states that a child should be allowed to act on behalf of Beit Din. We have other Braito that seemingly lean against him, which is answered. We have Rav Chista's explanation of the Braita, which clearly goes against Rav Sheshet, distinguishing between a child and a third party. Mara wants to know, my Haviala, what's the halacha? Which way do we go over here? Amarabo bar Rav Huna, v'chein tana debay Rav Yishmael, v'chol ein ben nase shliach l'aviv, l'akoto l'kalalo, chutz v'mesit. So here you have an explicit braita that states that a child may not be the shliach beit din, with the exception of one punishment, which is the case of mesit, the case where we know that the dinim, or the protocols of beit din, are waived in many ways, because of the same pasuk that we quoted all along, that there is no requirement to take care of this individual like you would take care of others. Therefore, we waive what would always normally be protocols of Beit Din, including the need for Hatra'ah, including the fact that you have to have Itzilu Aida. All of these protocols are waived. So too, with regards to Shliach Beit Din, we will waive the necessity, we will waive the restriction against the child being the individual who is the Shliach Beit Din. In this case, again, because of Lo Tachmov Lo Teches Alav, that the Torah specifically requires that you act in an Achzari way towards this individual. Having a child do it towards a parent might be akzari, but that is exactly what we're looking for in this situation. We're trying to make clear the severity of the restriction being violated over here, and that it would include a child being the shliach beit din towards the parent in this situation. Okay, now next Mishnah, and again we just basically quoted this Mishnah, which is Hamakeh aviv imo enu chayav at sheyaseh ben chabura, that when a person hits a parent, they're only chayav if there's a chaburat, there's a wound, there's an injury, blood is let in some way. That means whether it's external bleeding or internal bleeding, either one of those is sufficient. Zechomer b'mikalel b'mimakeh. There is a stringency by mikalel above makeh. Shemikalel achar mita chayav. This is what we just quoted in Rashi. That someone who curses achar mita is chayav, but makel achar mita is patur. One who hits after mita is patur. Again, on a technicality. They can't fulfill the requirement of chaburah, not because they wouldn't otherwise be chayav, they're only not chayav because they can't reach the threshold that the Torah sets out of a chaburah. Tan Rabbanan, aviv v'imo kilel. So again, this is something we saw earlier in the Masechta. Tosafot already says, go see what I said back on Daf Samach Vav and Aleph with regards to this. But we had back there that the Pasuk writes the word kilel both in the beginning and the end of the Pasuk in Pashat Kiddushim. So now it says, aviv v'imo kilel lachar mita. Gemara, through this braita, is learning that how do you know lachar mita, that there's also a restriction against klala? That the Gemara learns out from the fact that the word kilel at the end of that pasuk is extraneous. Because the pasuk already says, ashei kalel et aviv v'imo. So then it says, aviv v'imo kilel, why do you have to repeat the kilel again and aviv v'imo again? Extraneous. That extra pasuk teaches you even lachar mita, there's a restriction against klala. You would have logically thought otherwise, which is that if you compare makeh to mikalel, ma makeh enu chayav elo michayim, just like by haka'ah, you only chayav while the parent is alive, af mikalel enu chayav elo michayim, so too, the klala should have only applied while you were alive. Va'od, kal v'chomer. It's also another logical argument, which is, ma makeh shasa bo shlo ba'amcha ki ba'amcha, by makeh we have no qualification that the person has to be ose masei amcha. That doesn't apply by Haka. Lo chiv bo lachar mita. And over there, we say there is no chiyuv, there's no obligation or culpability after the death of the parent. Mikalel shlo asa bo shlo b'amcha ki b'amcha. By Mikalel, when we don't draw that parallel, we don't allow for that to be overridden. I mean, there is a qualification. The restriction only applies when he's ose ma'aseh amcha. Certain over here, he should not be chayav achar the mita of the individual. Tamilomar, aviv v'imo kilel achar mita. So that's what the pasuk comes to teach you. Don't learn this way. Don't allow this logic to dictate. But rather, the pasuk tells you that there is a restriction of klala achar mita, despite the logical conclusion, which would have been the other way around. Rashi asks you a question. Shaul is pointing out, didn't the Gemara just say before that you have a hekesh between haka'ah and klala? So how come the Gemara over here is saying that osei maaseh amcha only applies to klala and doesn't apply to haka'ah? So the Rashi says, to answer your question, v'aitana savar lo makshinin haka'ah leklala mipnei amikra mafsik bentayim. There is no hekesh according to this Tana of the Braita, otherwise you would have your problem. The only way you can distinguish about osei maaseh amcha only by klala and not by haka'ah is if you believe there is no hekesh between them. So the Gatana before believed there was such a hekesh. This Tana believes there is no such hekesh. So now Gemara says, Hanicha le Rabbi Yonatan. So this is the Gemara we saw back on Daf. Samach Vavu and Aleph, which is the machloket between Rabbi Yonatan and Rabbi Shaya. It is a shas level machloket, which is that whenever you have the Torah give you a number of items, and it uses a vav to separate them. How do we view that vav? Do we view that vav as a vav of chibur? And therefore you have to then do all of those items in order to be culpable? Or do we view it as a vav achiluk and say that each one of them independently is sufficient to make you chayav? So that's the machlok between them, and that's what it says. Anichal Rabbi Yonatan midiate lekra avivi mokilel. He has the avivi mokilel left over because he doesn't need it to teach you to separate between parents. El Rabbi Shaya ma'ikal meimar. For Rabbi Shaya, who needs that post to teach you to separate between a mother and a father, what are you going to do? Titania. Here's the braita we saw earlier. Ish ish. Matal Malomer ish ish. Why is there a duplicate lashon of ish ish? There are both bat, tumtum, vandroginus. Again, we spoke about this before. Ish ish, why would you have to include a woman? In general, we say that anytime it comes to a restriction in the Torah, it applies equally to males and females. This goes back to what we said in Tosafot yesterday, as well as Tosafot back on Samach Vavam and Aleph. That's true when the Parsha said in lashon zachar. But when the Torah specifically uses the word ish, it means ish velo isha. And so if over here you need ish ish, which comes basically a miut achar miut l'rabot, to tell you that the bat is included, despite the fact that normally women would be included to any restriction. Over here you need it because of the usage of the term ish. The fact that tumtum and androgynous are also included, either is because you have to say that it's shigrata lashon, which is whenever the Tana brings down something like this, they bring down bat, tumtum and androgynous all in one shot, so that's why it's brought over here. Because otherwise they should be subsumed. If a bat is chayav and a ben is chayav, then obviously a droganus and a tumtum should be chayav. Ela im kain, and this is the other possibility, you view tumtum and a droganus as a birya bifnei atzma. It's its own entity, not a ben, not a bat, and then you'd have to include it from ish, ish. Asher yikalel et aviv et imo, in the ela aviv ve imo. From that you have the vava chibur, which would indicate that a person is only culpable if they curse both parents. Not if they curse one of the two parents. Aviv shelo imo, imo shelo aviv. What happens in a situation where it's the father that's not without the mother, or the mother without the father, minayin? How do you know you're chayav there? Tamalomar, aviv v'imo kilel. So it says that his father and mother he cursed. Aviv kilel, imo kilel, divrei Rabbi Hoshaya. Basically in the pasuk, if you look at the pasuk, at one time, the ratio of the pasuk says, asheya kilel et aviv et imo, puts the word kilel next to the father. In the latter part of the posuk, it says, "Aviv imo kilel." So there, imo is next to the word kilel. So therefore, you have both parents next to the word kilel. From that, Rabbi Yishaya basically learns out that each one independently you are chayav for. But that means he uses that extraneous part of the posuk, "Aviv imo kilel," to teach him this din to separate between parents. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, "Mashma shneim keechad, mashma echad echad bifnei atzmo." Rabbi Yonatan says, "I don't know what you're talking about." When you say aviv v'imo, it means both or. I mean, it's like and or. Doesn't the vav can be both a vav chibur and can be a vav chiluk. It means each one independently or both of them together. You are chayav for. So that's why he doesn't need the extra pasuk. Ad shifrat lecha katuv yachdav. Till the Torah says specifically yachdav. Rashi or kishitato back on the daf samach vav says k'mo sheparat bechoresh b'shor b'chamor yachdav. There it says, lo tachrosh b'shor v'chamor yachdav. Over there you have shor v'chamor. Why does it have to say the word yachdav? If shor v'chamor automatically meant together, then you wouldn't need the word yachdav. It's clear that the word yachdav is coming to teach you that normally shor v'chamor would not mean them together. It would mean or, not and. And so therefore you need the word yachdav. That's how Rashi learns it. That word yachdav does it. It does that, teaches you that. The Balei Tosafot say that's just not the case, because you need the word yachdav to teach you the restriction of exactly how the restriction of kilayim works with regards to these items. And therefore Tosafot says it's a logical argument, not a statement from the word itself, yachdav, but rather the Torah has to specify that they are doing them together, otherwise it could be equally as separate and not together. What?
No. It really means that you're using them together.
Right, but you can hitch them separately, which is that you can hitch each one of them independently to the plow and not hitch them together on the plow. The restriction of kilayim is only when you hitch them together, not when you have a chamor attached to like one side and the shor attached on the other side. So that's Tosafot's argument back on Samach Vav, why he doesn't like Rashi's explanation, and therefore he says it's logical. That's what Tosafot says to you over here. Go back and look what I told you back on Samach Vav and Aleph, where I disagree with Rashi's proof. But that's a sidebar, because the real issue here is Rabbi Yonatan has the pasuk available to teach you klala lachar mita. But Rabbi Yoshaya Menalei, where does he learn that from? Because he doesn't have the extraneous pasuk, because he used that to teach you aviv or imo. Nafkale me umikalel aviv imo motumat. He uses the pasuk of Mishpatim that says a person who curses his mother or his father motumat. So here again we have another pasuk, which not panim parsha kedushim, panim parsha Mishpatim, which is extra, to teach you that that is even lachar mita. Vidach, how mi bailele rabot bat tum tum androginus. He uses that to teach you mikalela vivi mo motumat, because over here there's no qualification of ish. The word ish is absent in that pasuk, which would indicate any child that curses their parent would be culpable. So vidach, how mi bailele rabot bat tum tum androginus. Rabbi Yonatan uses that to include these individuals. Rabbi Yonatan uses it to include these individuals. But typically, me ish ish. Why does he learn that from the double lashon of ish ish, like Rabbi Shaya did? Dibra Torah, Kalashon B'nei Adam. Yonatan believes ish ish is not a limud, but rather just a literary style of the Torah. That's the way the Torah presents information. It uses duplication of language sometimes. You can't make something significant out of something that's just literary style. It's not teaching you anything from ish ish. Velitnei. So now the Gemara goes back and tries to challenge our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that there's a chomer by klala over haka'a, which is klala applies to achamita. Haka'a does not apply to achamita. Now he said, the Gemara says, litnei chomer b'makeh b'mekalel. Why doesn't the Mishnah also note that there's a chumra when it comes to haka'a that doesn't apply to mekalel, which is shemakeh asabo shloka amcha kibamcha, that by haka'a, the braita, the tana of the braita brought us, that haka'a applies whether the person is osei maseh amcha or doesn't do osei maseh amcha. Mashein came by mekalel, which is not true by mekalel, when there is that qualification that you're only culpable where it's osei maseh amcha. Kasavar, makshinan haka'a, leklala. Our town of our Mishnah thinks that there is such a hekesh. So back to Shaul's question, what happened in that braita? That's exactly what happened in that braita. It's differentiated from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says there is a hekesh of haka'a to klala, whereas the Braita says there is no hekesh haka'a klala. That results in there being a difference, which is, everybody agrees that there is klala lachar mita, because we have a posuk that is mirabeh, the fact that there's a klala lachar mita. Now, with regards to haka'a versus klala, that will depend on whether you have a hekesh or not. If you have a hekesh, then just like there's a qualification of osei maseh amcha by klala, so too there will be such a qualification by haka'a. That's what the author of our Mishnah believes. That's why the author of Mishnah says there's only one difference between klala and haka'a, and that is klala applies to achar mita, which is not true by haka'a. On the other hand, the author of the Braita, the town of the Braita, says there is no such hekesh. That means that there are two distinctions. One distinction is that klala applies to achar mita. The other distinction is that by haka'a, there is no qualification of osei maseh amcha, because there is no hekesh between klala to haka'a. That means haka'a applies to everyone, and that'll be the difference between the author of the Braita and the author of our Mishnah. So now Gemara says, let us say the machlok between that Braita and our Mishnah is similar to this machlok of Tanaim. The Tani Chado, we have one Braita that says, Kuti atam mitzuvel haka'ato. When it comes to a Kuti, you are restricted against hitting a Kuti. V'atam mitzuvel kilalato. On the other hand, you're not restricted against cursing the Kuti. The Tani Idach, we have another Braita that says, I'atam mitzuvel lo kilalato v'lo haka'ato. You're not restricted in either issue. Sabrua, let us assume. So you know, by the way, what the answer to the question, what the answer to this problem is. don't assume this, and then you won't have this conclusion. But the Gemara is proposing an assumption, which is the Kuliyama Kutim Gere Emetim. Everybody agrees that the Kutim went through a full-fledged conversion, and they are 100% Jewish. The only problem is that they are Jews who left the faith, who have gone off the Derech. So now you have a Kutim who's off the Derech. So now, what do you do with that? You have a qualification of, let's say, Maaseh Amcha, which says that Klala won't apply to someone who's gone off the Derech. So now, both Braitot say that Klala is not applicable because of the qualification of, let's say, Maaseh Amcha. Only one of the Braitot said that Haka'ah is not a problem, and that'll be the machlok between them. Is there a hekesh between Haka'ah and Klala? My love, Hakam Iflegate, the Masavah Makshin and Haka'ah le Klala, the latter Braitot says you are Mekish them, and therefore you're Patur on both of them. Whereas Mar Sabar, the first Braita, believes Lo Makshin Haka'ah le Klala, we don't have the Hekesh, and therefore only Klala is not a problem by the Kuti, but Haka'ah will be a problem by the Kuti. Mar says, well, the Kuliyama Lo Makshin Haka'ah le Klala. Everybody agrees there's no such Hekesh, but Haka'ah miflegate. This is the Machloket. Mar Sabar Kutim Geri Emetim. Mar Sabar Kutim Geri Areyotim. Depends, the Machloket here is whether they are classified as real converts or not as real converts. That's the machloket between them. So here, first of all, there's no hekesh between Haka'ah and Klala. So that goes off the board. The question now is, are they considered to be Jews or are they not considered to be Jews? If they're considered to be full-fledged Jews, they're Jews, but they're not practicing Jews now, and therefore they're governed by the qualification of Osei Maaseh Amcha with Klala, but not by Haka'ah, because there's no hekesh, and that's why they're chayav Haka'ah. The Braita that says they are Patur, the Gamrei, believes that they were Gerei Areyot. They were never real converts. They're non-Jews. Therefore, there's no Din of Haka or Klala by the Kutim. Gemara says about that, Iochi, Hainu Detani Allah, what are you going to do with that? Mishnah continues and says, Vishoro ki Yisrael, that his shore is like a full-fledged Jewish shore. So there are two dinim with regards to a shore. One din with regards to a shore is that the Yisrael that does damage differentiates between Shor Mu'ad and Shor Tam. The second thing is that a Jew's shore that is damaged, you are responsible for. That is as opposed to an Oved Kochavim. I'm not going to get into all the details of that, why the din is like that from the Mishnah in Baba Kama, why there's a distinction between the Jewish shore and the Oved Kochavim shore. But the Mishnah over there makes it clear that the Kuti has the same din as Israel. With regards to Mu'ad and Tam, the Chachamim or Kones, there is a Knas that's putting it. Tosfot points out, Lav the Gamik Yisrael. It's not exactly like Yisrael. Shnagach, she's Shoshal Yisrael, Shnagach, Shoshal Kuti, Patur, Mishum the Kansinilo. There's a Knas that's imposed, but that's all an imposition to the Chachamim. But otherwise, the Mishnah seemingly says that they are considered to be Gerei Emet. If that's the case, the distinction that you made over here between Gerei Emet and Gerei Reyot doesn't work, because the Braita is continued by a statement that says Shorok Yisrael. And that means that everybody agrees that they are Kisrael. And the only distinction you can make between the two opinions there in that Braita would be to say whether there is a hekesh between Haka'ah and Klala or there's no hekesh between Haka'ah and Klala. And that's the only way that you can explain that scenario over there. And that means that's the machloki between them is the same machloki we have between our Mishnah and the Braita as to whether there is such a hekesh between Haka'ah and Klala. Elo shmamina behekesh plegei shmamina. That's what we just dictated, that the machloki between the Braita must be the hekesh, which is also the machloki between our Mishnah and the author of the Braita, as to whether there is such a hekesh. Right, next Mishnah. Gonev nefesh Misrael. Kidnapping. So the Gemara is going, Mishnah out here are going through the first Mishnah's list of individuals who are chayav chenek. So now we're up to kidnapping. Einu chayav ad shechinisenu l'rishuto. Only chayav once you take him into your possession. So you have to bring him into your possession in order to be chayav. And the Rashi says over here, Rashi says, and tell us about seconds, this says, the person kidnapped, and now it's found in his possession. So that's the requirement that he be in his possession, because it says v'nimtza biyado. The only way it's nimtza biyado means it's in his possession. So tell us what asked your question. Tell us what says he's not sure about your question as to what does it mean nimtza birshuto. Does nimtza birshuto mean the same thing that we find by gneva and other things? Nimtza b'shuto literally means in your possession, meaning that your property is holding this individual, they're in your reshut. Or nimtza b'shuto, the equivalent of what a kinyan involves, which means if you do a kinyan hagbah, that's in your possession, even though technically it's not in your property. So that's how the vote has a question, but he's not sure. In this case, what b'nimtza b'yado means, Does that mean literally to bring them into your property? Or does it simply mean you have to bring them into your possession, which can be done through a kinyan, which you do a kinyan akbah? Maybe that would work over here. So that's what is left, leaves a bit sarachion on that issue. Alright. Not only does he have to take him into his possession, he also has to utilize the individual, Shnemar, Behit Amer Bo. The pasuk says, not only did he kidnap him, but then he put him to work, or he did something with him. Umecharo, and then sold him, then one of those two things will cause him to be chayav for the kidnapping, whether it's that he utilized him or he sold him. Now, selling him might be the equivalent of utilizing him, because you're basically trading the person like a slave. That might be the consideration of Behit Amer Bo. Agonevet Beno, someone who steals their own child, Rabbi Shmuel Beno Shel, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka, Michayev, says you are Chayav in that case. Chamim, Potrim, say you are Potor. Ganav, Misha Chetzio Evet, Bechetzio Ben Chorin. Someone who steals someone who's a Chetzi Evet and a Chetzi Ben Chorin. Rabbi Yehuda Michayev, Chamim Potrim. Yehuda says you're Chayav, Chamim Potrim. All of these will be discussed in the Gemara as to the source for each of these Tanaim's position. Alright, Tanakama, Lobayi, more. It seems a little strange that the Tanakhama says you just need to bring the person into your possession. He doesn't require utilization of the individual. Doesn't the pasuk say Yitamer Bo? It's pretty straightforward that you need that part of it in order to be chayav. Amracha Brederava Imor Pachot Mishaver Putah Ika Benayu. Question is how significant the utilization has to be. Does the shimosh have to be something that has monetary worth to it? That's what it seems like the Rabbi Huda is suggesting. Whereas the Tanakhama says that the imur can be even something that has no monetary worth. It's a simple utilization of the individual makes you chayav. Bayi Rabbi Yirmiyah, ginavo micharo yashen mahu. If a person is kidnapped and then sold while they're sleeping, what's the din? Machari shalu ubra mahu. Kidnaps a woman and then sells the fetuses, sells the children, what's the din? Yesh derech imur bekach, oin derech imur bekach. Is that considered to be the utilization of the individual or not? But typically, Deleka Imor Klal. Why are you saying, is this Imor? Why don't you say there is no Imor here whatsoever? Person who's sleeping, there is no Imor. You can't utilize someone who is sleeping. By a woman who's pregnant, you're not utilizing the woman, you are selling the fetuses, those that are in utero. That's not the utilization of the woman. Where it says, lo, tzricha yashen d'zagale. Case where he's sleeping, he uses him as a rest or some sort of prop. He leans on the individual, he rests on the individual. So he's using the individual while they're sleeping. Isha de ukma ba pezika. The woman has a wider berth now because she is pregnant. And so therefore you stand her up to block the wind from affecting you. So he's utilizing these individuals in that way. Derech imur bekach, o ein imur bekach. And that's the exact question of the Gemara, which is that considered to be utilization that is imur? Shimush with the individual. Are these considered to be real types of utilization? Or the fact that the person's sleeping, that's not really utilizing the person, even though you're laying on them or resting on them, that's not real utilization. Same with the woman. She's standing there, blocking the wind. But that doesn't mean, are you really using or utilizing the individual? That the Gemara leaves off, but what's the din? Teiku. That we don't know. Tarabanan. Ki imatze ish gonev nefesh me'echav. Person who is found kidnapping a fellow Jew. Ain li ela ish shiganav. I only have a man who stole, because ki matzei ish. Person is a man, and again here, this is a Tosafot's distinction, when you use the word ish, it comes to preclude an isha. So I only have a case here where the kidnapper is an ish. Isha minayin. How do I know a woman who is the kidnapper is also responsible? Tamal Omar. Vigonev ish. The pasuk that's found in Mishpatim. The first pasuk we quoted is from Dvarim. This pasuk is quoted from Mishpatim, which is the Gonev Ish. This is the pasuk that sits between Haka'ah and Klalav Avivimo. This is the Gonev Ish. Over there, there's no subject. It says who you kidnap. It doesn't say who the kidnapper is. So over there, it's generic, and that means it includes an Isha. En le'ele Ish, Sheganav, Ben Isha, Ben Ish. So now I have a setup by which a man who is the kidnapper, whether he kidnaps a fellow man or kidnaps a woman, he's going to be Chayav. That is because the pasuk in Mishpatim says v'gonev ish. That sounds like only if you kidnap a man. The pasuk in Dvarim doesn't say that. It says ki matzei ish gonev nefesh. Nefesh would include anybody. So therefore you have either an ish or an isha. If they are kidnapped by a man, you are chayav. That I got from the psukim. V'isha shegunva ish. And I also know a woman who steals or kidnaps a man, because there it says begonev ish. But what about, she doesn't have the pasuk of nefesh, because nefesh defines it by ish. Isha shegunva isha minayin. How we know a woman who kidnaps another woman is going to be chayav? Tamal omar umet haganav hahu. Mikol makom. That the ganav gets punished by death no matter what, and there's no definition to the ganav or the gneva. So along the lines of what you're suggesting, which is lo tignov, meaning that once you put the generic term gneva there, it's irrespective of who the kidnapper is and who the kidnapped is. Tani idach, we have another brayta. Ki matzei ish gonev nefesh me'echav. Echara gonev et ha'ish, ve'echara gonev et ha'isha. Because over there it says, gonev nefesh. So nefesh over there doesn't define who you are kidnapping. So it doesn't matter whether it's nish or isha. Ve'echad ger, ve'echad evin mishukhrar. It doesn't matter if it's a convert, a freed slave, a katan, or a katan, chayav. All of those are subsumed under the term nefesh. So anybody you kidnap, you'll be chayav for. Ganvo velo mecharo. You stole him, kidnapped him. Velo mecharo, did not sell him. Mecharo v'adayin yeshno birushuto. He sold the individual, but they're still in his possession. Patur. Mecharo le'aviv o le'achav. If he sold the kidnapped individual to the parent or to the brothers. O le'achad min ha'krovim, or any other relative, chayav. He's still chayav. That's what I was thinking about when I was learning it. It's equivalent of extortion or ransoming the individual, where you steal the individual and they pay to get him back or to redeem them back. So over here, that's considered to be kidnapping with a payment or a selling that's going on. Hagonevet avadim, patur. Someone who steals or kidnaps slaves is patur. That is because when you steal the slave, you're stealing property and not a person. And that's the way that Evi Kanani is viewed for this, with regards to this issue. As opposed to murder, where they're viewed as being human beings and the person would be culpable. When it comes to injury or monetary issues, then they're considered to be theft. You stole property, you did not steal a person, you did not kidnap a person. That's number one. Number two is that they're already designated for shimush. These individuals are already avadim and they're already in the world of shimush. And therefore, the shimush may not be significant in terms of the gneva, but for that reason, gnevet avadim is patur. Tani tana kamei de Rav Sheshet. So this brayta was brought before Rav Sheshet, said over before Rav Sheshet. Amalei ani shonet. Rabbi Shimon Omer me'echav ad shiutzienu mirshut echav. When it says in the pasuk, ki matzei ish gnev nefesh me'echav, that you stole someone from his brethren. So we read it as being from his fellow Jews, from a fellow Jew or from amongst the nation. Rabbi Shimon reads it more literally, me'achav, from his family. The kidnapping has to be taken away and then sold away from his family. That means if you sold back to the family, you would not be chayav. And that's what Rabbi Sheshet says, v'atamart chayav. You said, chayav, tnei patur. Change the din and the brayta, not to read chayav, but rather patur. It says, my kushya. What's the question? Dilma ha-Rabbi Shimon ha-Rabbonan. Just because you hold like one Tana doesn't mean the Braita that brings the other Tana's position down is wrong. It just means that that's the alternate opinion. That's the opposing opinion. Why do you have to amend the Braita to follow Rabbi Shimon? It says, Lo salka datcha. So here we have a very important statement of the Gemara. This is something that we quote many times. Rashi quotes it all over Shas. Dama Rabbi Yochanan, Stam Matnitan Rabbi Meir. Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Stam Tosefta Rabbi Nechemio. A Stam Tosefta is authored by Rabbi Nechemia. Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda. Sifra is the Midrash Halakha on Vayikra. It's Torah Kohanim. So that Stam Sifra is authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Stam Sifrei. Sifrei is the Midrash Halakha on Bamidbar and Dvarim. Rabbi Shimon is authored by Rabbi Shimon. Bekulu Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. And they're all in the name of Rabbi Akiva. These are Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So that means kol stama in Shas is like stam, kol stam, whether it's a brayta, tosefta, it's a midrash halacha, tosefta, or a mishnah, are all in the following the position of Rabbi Akiva, because these are all students of Rabbi Akiva. So now, what we're saying over here is, you just quoted a sifrei. You quoted a midrash halacha on Dvarim. The pasuk that we're quoting here is from Dvarim Chavdalit in Parshat Kiteitze, and there, the midrash halacha is from sifrei. Now you have a Stam Sifrei, which is authored by Rabbi Shimon. So you can't say that the Stam Sifrei says Chayav in it when Rabbi Shimon's position is Patur. Because if a Stam Sifrei is Rabbi Shimon, then by definition it should follow the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And that's what Rabbi Sheshet was criticizing, the person bringing the Braita down. That can't be the way to read the Braita. The Braita must read Patur and not Chayav in order to follow the position of Rabbi Shimon. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Pei Vav, Omer Aleph.